Hey, this is Leah.
And this is Channing.
And you've reached Vessel, Art is a Doorway.
Welcome to episode 18. Hey everyone, we're so happy that you're here with us today on this episode. If this is your first time here at this podcast at Vessel Art is a Doorway, we want to really thank you. And if you're a frequent listener, we want to thank you again just for being with us because it really means a lot that you're here with us. Today's episode is with Tyrone Vincent. I think you're really going to enjoy it. He's a fascinating art collector in Frankfurt, Germany.
Yeah, Tyrone is such a genuine person. He and owns over 900 pieces of artwork. And it's really interesting because of how he has taken his love and passion of collecting and he shares that with other people. He's very influential in the Frankfurt art scene and organizing certain functions in the art world in Frankfurt. And he's a big proponent of all ages and backgrounds, whether it be financial, educational, whatever, to enjoy the benefits of living with art by collecting. So you guys are really going to enjoy listening to his fascinating life experience, especially when it comes to collecting art.
So let's listen into this interview with Tyrone Vincent. Well, audience, we have the pleasure of having with us Tyrone Vincent. Tyrone Vincent is a magnificent person. We came across him on Instagram and social media, but when we saw what he was doing, we were just blown away, audience. And I think you're really going to enjoy this discussion that we have with him. Tyrone, you can't really define him in any way. You can't put a title on him, but he is an art collector. And I think you're really going to enjoy some of the things that we talk about in this discussion. Tyrone Vincent, thank you for joining us.
It's absolutely my pleasure. I'm so happy to be here. Greetings all the way from Frankfurt, Germany.
Thank you. Yes, Frankfurt, Germany. That's about 9 hours ahead of us right now. So it's about a little bit past 9 a.m. And I think it's about 6 o'clock your time in the evening.
Yes, it is. It's 6:14 in Frankfurt, Germany, CET time.
Awesome. Awesome. What is the weather like out there?
Today's been easy. You know, it's the end of August, so it's still easy. We were in the 85s, 90s, so it's a little windy. The sky is blue and white with clouds, so it's all good. It's a very nice
awesome, day. Awesome, awesome. Well, it's so good to have you with us, Tyrone. We've been trying to track Tyrone down for some time now, audience, and it is such a pleasure to finally get him in a corner so we can ask him just a ton of questions, many things that we've been wondering about. When you'll be able to see Tyrone's several of the links to some of the things that he's been involved in the show's notes. And you'll notice that on his social media, he's actually being interviewed on several different occasions. I believe you just told us before we hit the record button that you were interviewed about 18 times this week, correct?
Yeah, this is a peak time. I don't want people to think, you know, that the frequency of interviewing has anything to do with the importance of a person. But I'm ahead of a big project personally for myself and for the city that I live in and the artists and the gallerists. And we had the press conference on Monday and naturally followed is the interview. So it's been an intense week.
Well, no doubt you've been a busy man. But could you tell our audience a little bit about yourself, your background and your education and where you come from?
I'm born and raised in Germany, though my family, my father is black. He's from the States. He's from Virginia. And so I had the pleasure of going back and forth. I lived in the States for some time. I lived in New York before prior in the wild 90s. I lived in Chicago in the 80s. We most recently gave up our place in Miami to move permanently back to Frankfurt, Germany, because this is where my mothers are. I'm adopted, so I have two mothers.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Could you tell us a little bit about your education and maybe how you were able to make it into Frankfurt? Obviously, your mother arrived in Frankfurt and
yes,
those are some of the things. But what made you get started with doing some of the things that you're doing currently?
Well, you know, currently being an art collector and being an entrepreneur in my regular business, I'm what people call a show producer. So that means and I know people are going to be fainting. I'm one of the responsible producers for Fashion Weeks worldwide. I produced Milan, I produced Paris, I produced Berlin. And most recently, the Corporate of Affairs has announced that the Fashion Week next will take place in Frankfurt and leaving Berlin. So this was big news. And this is a project I've been working on for the last 5 years in cooperation with a bunch of people, many agencies, and of course, the city of Frankfurt. So just, you know, just in short terms, I'm just trying to stay busy.
I think you're staying true to that, no doubt.
So what was your, we always like to ask people, what was your first memory or encounter with art?
Oh, I was a youngster. Would you have to realize this? I don't want to say I was troubled, but I was always a wild spirit. So the first time I ran away from home, I was 14. Then I went back, you know, traditional, the energies was high. My father and me clashed, which led to me moving out with 16. And from the first money I've gotten in my job back in the day, it must have been with 16, 17, I bought myself the first poster. It was a regular poster. You go to a record store, you know, back in the day it was still records, and then after that the CDs came, and then these kind of stores you would buy anything like merchandise, t-shirts for rock concerts and stuff like that. So I went to the next bigger city, and I bought myself one afternoon a poster, which was by Salvador Dali. That was my first actual piece. Today, you know, I'm not ashamed of it. My mom kept it, but in the collection today, which contains about anywhere between 950 and 1,100 pieces. It doesn't have a space, but emotionally it always will.
Mm-hmm. And you said you were about 16, 14 to 16?
I was, yeah. I want to say it was anywhere between 16 and 17 when I went out to buy the first. I want to consider them decorative pieces, you know, because back in the day I was not, I didn't have a clue what I was doing. And then, you know, you turn 18, you become wild, you go out and party, and you're busy with other stuff. So just to be fairfully said, when I was a youngster, I was just busy, you know, modeling, dancing, into pop culture. And then later when I calmed down a little bit, that's when my focus shifted, and I became a little more serious with collecting. But still today, I'm not that serious. I'm in it for the fun.
That's cool. Yeah.
So it was an original Salvador Dali?
If it was an original Salvador Dali, you would call me on my island in the Caribbean. Because I probably would have sold it. And that would be it. No, it's not an original. It was just a poster. I mentioned it before.
Yeah. Very nice. Very nice.
But I do have I want to pull your leg. I do have an original in the house, which is a statue. It's a sculpture.
Oh, very nice. Wonderful. Very nice. So how would you say art has had an influence on your life?
Many things had influences in my life, but I'm coming to the point where, you know, especially in these troubled times that we're in, where people look for guidance and they look for orientation and they look for direction, I realize that art keeps me afloat. It keeps me based. It keeps me calm. Sometimes when you struggle with something and you pull back from everyday life to just read a book and stay at home, you have a chance to contemplate on things. And this, for me, art is an enhancer, a catalyst for these kind of processes.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, that's so interesting. So I could just imagine you being about, 16 or 17, going home with that piece of art of Salvador Dali's. What was that like? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't remember, but you know, I've most recently spoken in another interview, and when I go back there emotionally and mentally, you know, I took it home and I immediately framed it. And this is very unusual for a youngster, you know, because you normally just tape it on the wall or you pin it on the wall. But for me, it had so much value that I treated it differently. It was just not a poster. I framed it up with a glass frame and stuff like that. And believe it or not, it's in my mom's home. She is 73 now, and it's still in the same frame. It's still sitting there.
That's really nice. So what kind of works do you find that you are usually drawn to?
You know, to find works and to grow into the liking and loving of art is a process. It takes time. And I realize it's easier for people when you're not busy with life otherwise. AKA raising kids, going to school, getting an education, being out and partying, love making, kissing, chasing life. When you art will sneak up on you when you're in a moment of tranquility, you know. And after all these years, when I go out and I look with knowing everything I know now about different techniques, materials, different perspectives, different philosophies, you are able to identify pieces without a certain background, you know, knowing that one of you is doing ceramics. You know, I was in a point in my life before where I said, oh, porcelain, ceramics, I'm not into it. And now I feel that I've grown up to the point that I can buy art pieces that have a meaning and a standing in the craftsmanship and quality and in the philosophy of the artist challenging a task he has given himself to own this piece, which years and years ago I would have never done that.
Mm-hmm. That's really fascinating.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And do you find that kind of like as you're talking about your experience, do you find that your taste has grown? Or, well, I guess that's basically what you're saying. As time goes on, you find yourself changing.
Yeah.
Does that change the way you display your work in your house? Or do you feel like it kind of, those older pieces that maybe you wouldn't, do you feel like it just kind of reminds you of a different time in your life?
Oh, it's essential. And this is another thing, you know, I don't know. Did you have a chance to check out any of the videos?
Yes.
I have online? There's an essential, interview being released right now. You couldn't have seen it because number one, unfortunately I recorded it in German, and number two, it's not officially released yet. Mm. And I refer in this interview to your process of growth of your soul and of your heart involves detours. Not every way that you walk is a main road, and not every side road you take is a dead end. And this is greatly reflected, I think, in my collection. When you look at pieces, I'm able to recall the circumstance emotionally under which I have bought these things, and that connects all of them. You know, I have masterpieces in the collection, and a masterpiece is not because you write on their masterpiece. It's a masterpiece because the artist had an incredible vision and he executed it to his most outstanding talent. And it speaks to you, and it not only speaks to you, you can contextualize it in the time that you're in. And then you have another challenge, you know, which the listeners are probably can't imagine. I'm a black man living in Germany with a white mom from Hungary and a black father from Caribbean, from the Caribbeans. And that has a different approach because I went to European schools. In European schools and living in Europe, you know, even though there's a richness of different countries that you do not have like that in the States, because when I travel, literally I'm in another country. It's not just another dialect. It's different food, it's different thinking, it's a different political system. And of course it has different art. And to understand that, to reflect on yourself and then put yourself into the context of your own life with my history of traveling and getting all these different inputs from these different nations and countries I travel to, that's, I think, one of the biggest achievements of my life, that I'm able to let go now and I can just like what I like.
Yeah, really enjoyed hearing that. The fact that the diversity of your family, your background, and seeing that your father comes from the Caribbean. Which island?
Mm-hmm. St. Lucia.
Oh, St. Lucia. Okay, that's beautiful.
St. Lucia, as we say it.
Yeah, but just seeing the diversity in your background is really amazing. And I know you mentioned race there in Germany. I believe so many people, they have a different feeling about things like that, because when we got a chance to visit last year, it was really, we just felt comfortable, you know, riding our scooters around in Germany. It was amazing. And we really felt at ease, but that's really interesting, you know, hearing things from your perspective. But what are some of your top two concerns that influence your decision on whether or not you want to add a piece to your collection? What would you say?
Heart and eyes. If a peace I see is convincing my heart, and if a peace I see is convincing my eyes, then I'm almost done. And another symptom that I normally get when I see a piece, I get chills. It sounds completely romantic and silly, but if you see something that puts you into an awe state, then your body will respond. And another thing that I realize sometimes that my hand get wet. What I normally then do is I'll take extra time to not buy the piece, to see if this is just infatuation or if it could be the beginning of something that I'm connected to. I don't want to, I have a hard time acting on impulse.
That's really interesting. It almost sounds, you know, as I'm listening to you, I dabble into finance, and some of the financial people I listen to, or sometimes some of the books I read, they also talk about making purchases in a similar light, not just based off of emotion, but really analyzing why you want to make that purchase. And I really appreciate that when you said you have to allow your heart and your eyes to be convinced. That's really amazing.
If any young collectors are listening to this podcast, honestly, don't let anybody tell you what's good for you. You know, not the art market. You know, which, you know, I'm sure we're going to get to this. The art market is an industry where people choose artistic product for you, and then there's another sideline of the classics where you can trade money for artistic value, which has such a strong label that you wonder sometimes, is this about just trading money for a piece that, you know, it's a different source, like you have a battery and you charge it with something. These artworks that are in there for that purpose are just trades for money, and that's for me, that's a really big challenge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I want to just bring up, I was looking at some of your Instagram feed, and I noticed it was sort of like a recording or it was a recording of you and your interaction when a piece of artwork was shipped to you.
Oh, and yes.
The piece of artwork was damaged.
Yes, it arrived. Yeah.
Just tell us a little bit about that.
I just, as you see by my response, this is still, this is the piece right here.
That's the piece. That's right, yeah. Right.
What happened is I bought a piece online, knowing the artist, and it's an incredible work, which you cannot see. It's a mathematical work because the stripes are strings, and it's a special Indonesian Balinesian string that's knitted onto a canvas from Zimbabwe, Rhodesia, or formerly Rhodesia in Africa. And this combines the history of the artist because his wife is from Zimbabwe and he is Spanish, and he lives in Bali now in Indonesia. So this work is really one of a kind. It's one of the best ones he has done so far. Even when he states that it's not, you know, when an artist tells you that he has done good work, you can tell it is good because he hesitates to sell it. Mm-hmm. I had to go the extra mile to get this work shipped. And then when it arrived, it fell off the airplane and it broke.
Oh my goodness. Man.
Yeah. This was 10 days before last year's edition of the Frankfurt Art Experience, the festival that I'm organizing as the leading director. And it was a major piece within the new hanging, because when I have these events, people come to my house and they want to see the collection, not because you want to woo them and say, look how posh I live. My intention is to make sure and remind everybody that no matter what salary you have and under which living conditions you are able to buy art and you are able to live with art. This does not involve million-dollar budgets. If you want to buy art, don't let anybody tell you cannot do this, and don't let anybody tell you only expensive stuff is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. And
so when the piece was here and it was broken, the artist hopped on a plane in Indonesia, which is a 15-hour flight. So he flew from Indonesia to Jakarta, from Jakarta to Dubai, from Dubai to Frankfurt, and he repaired the piece himself. And this is the reason that you can see it actually right now in this ongoing exhibition.
Wow, audience. Incredible. audience, we get a chance to see some of this work, but and we, you know, maybe if you get an opportunity, just go to Tyrone's social media and you'll also get an opportunity to see some of this work too.
It's beautiful.
It's really beautiful. But yeah. But I remember seeing your reaction. I know you were really happy to get the piece, but when you saw it damaged, I could just see the breakdown in your the pain in your heart.
You know what the hardest thing is, and this is something I talk about in the video as well. You have to tell an artist that works on a piece for 4 months that it arrives, and the artist wants to hear how much you love it, and you have to tell the artist it's broken. That's you know, this has been one of the biggest challenges ever, because this is not a game. It's somebody sitting down and making a work. And you tell them that, you know, some of the investment in time and emotions has been damaged. This is what this is all about. It's not necessarily about a broken work, because this happens more than we know, but it's about you facing somebody and say, somebody broke your emotions and your dedication. That's the hardest part.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And also hearing you mention that anyone can be a collector. Now, I know some who may be listening to this, when they hear the term art collector, they may be a little confused about that term when you talk about, you know, someone being a collector of art or acquiring art. But why do you feel that way? Why do you feel that anyone can be an art collector?
It's so important. I was so insecure when I started to collect pieces, because you have a bunch of people walking around telling you what you buy is no good, because it doesn't have a label. You know, they're trying to implement the same techniques and mechanics that you know from other markets, and you're a financial trader. You know, they're trying to tell you it needs to carry a label. Yes, if you go into art collecting and you are a heavy set multi-million-dollar investor, then you probably want to trade your money for something that has incredible value so your money doesn't get lost. Mm-hmm. This is not the approach of my collection. My collection is somebody working, setting money to the side. And if I say setting money to the side, it could be anywhere from $20 to $50 to $100 to $10,000. You do not know. Mm-hmm. But this is what, you know, art collecting means for me. And I want to make sure people get the idea out of their head that art collecting is a job. This is a hobby. This is something you do on the side. You know, I have everyday values in my job that I treat with the same respect and the same definitions than I treat my hobby, with sincerity and with heart and passion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoyed that, hearing passion and it comes from your heart. It's something that really moves you on the inside. And as artists, it really, you know, it really encourages us to hear that, because sometimes, like, I do a lot of wheel throwing, and I've heard a lot of people say, well, okay, when you're a ceramist or a potter, sometimes you kind of go into this state where your mind is at ease. But sometimes when you have a commissioned piece, my mind is not at ease. As a matter of fact, there's a little trepidation with me, and I feel a certain way because I want to make sure that I please the customer. And so
you want to make people happy. This is, you know, it's the I'm not sure if pleasing is the right word. Yeah. You want to make somebody happy.
Happy. That's right.
You know,
right.
If somebody comes to you and wants a commission, they're willing to work with you. And I'm describing this from the view of an easy collector. You know, there's people that go to an artist and say, I want it like this, like that, like that, which reminds me that you want to talk to somebody at Home Depot and tell them to build a staircase. This is not what commission is about. Commission is about you trying to understand if you share energy with the person that you're speaking to, which happens to be an artist. And if you're so convinced that you think there's a vibe, then you probably trust. And this is about trust, you know. It's dealing with art has a lot to do with trust in the right ways. There's a lot of trust being misused, you know, promising people and telling people stuff. It's not about that. It's about you trusting an artist to express something that you can relate to freely.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. So now when it comes to your work as a collector, do you specifically worry more so about emerging or established artists?
Nope. I'm going to say it in a slang terminology. It's all the same crap. It doesn't matter if somebody emerges. It doesn't matter if somebody lived 100 years ago, 200 years ago. It's about the quality of thought behind a piece. That's one thing. I want to make sure that people understand there's a difference between the concept and the execution. So what we just spoke about is the concept. Now, if that concept of somebody trying to make an artwork happening, not just thinking about it, then you come to the execution, and then it involves craftsmanship, knowledge. It's the hardest thing, and I just released a book on the collection. It's the hardest thing for an artist to learn a lifelong. If you're a ceramicist, did you realize a piece of ceramic was just sold, I think, in an auction in New York or Paris, which I think was the highest price ever achieved by a ceramic art piece? I think it was millions, you know? If you learn all of this, let's say you are a mature artist, and maturity means not age, maturity means knowledge and wisdom in techniques and everything that you need to create. And then you have to let it all go and go back to reset. This is the artworks that you're looking for. If somebody is not trying to woo you and posh you with their possibilities, because the artists that I know are incredible, they can do things that you and I cannot imagine, but to throw it all aside and then do a simple drawing line, do a simple interpretation, do a simple suggestion of a thought. These are the hardest works to find, and these are the most incredible works to own.
Yeah, that's so true. It's like you spend time trying to hone your skill, but it's almost like you have all these tools in the toolbox, and you have to learn, you know, which one to use and at what time and how much. And that takes restraint, and that takes that wisdom and maturity that you're talking about.
Yeah. And, you know, when you have these conversations, ceramic is just an interesting field because it's such an old craft. To find, we're talking about human heritage, you know, and I want people to understand that this is not just somebody sitting down and forming clay. We're talking about the development of mankind for the last 2.8 million years, and ceramics has been an essential part of this human growth anywhere in the world. You have to put all that into account. And sometimes it's not the posh pieces. It's not the glamour. It's to be able to conquer as a ceramicist the most simple form and to create the most delicate thing with the knowing of techniques of thousands of years is the hardest thing ever.
Yeah. Okay. So with your collection, what inspires it? I know some people have like a theme or something like that.
I'm going to do the same thing I did with your husband. Nope. You know, and it's one thing. I grew up in a generation where people say, yeah, you have to, your collection has to be about something. And you know where I struggle with this sentence? I am about something because I'm a living, breathing human being. But I cannot tell you if I want to have ice cream for breakfast and then eat, I don't know, Twinkies for lunch and then have spaghetti and meatballs at night and then eat a cake at midnight. I could not tell you because you have to follow your heart. Now, if you become a collector, this is the same thing. You have to listen to your heart. This is the most essential thing. Whatever you feel, and whatever mechanisms you develop for yourself on how you trust yourself. I don't trust all of my decisions I make. You know, sometimes it's just jumping into an abyss and you'd be like, ooh, I hope this is going to be good, you know. I have works that challenge me every day. It's like an ongoing wrestle with my mind. But these are the works that make a collection special. And, you know, speaking about it, I'm considered a black collector. But then rarely people know that my mom is Hungarian Danish. She's white, and my father is black. Now, growing up in the European school system, I'm trained to relate to what you call European white art. But it doesn't count. It's about the quality, you know. You if you speak to Kehinde Wiley, who has developed an amazing style, he refers to this learnings as a reference in the history of mankind, because this is just about art. It's about another person not another color, defining shape and spirit and philosophy. And this is where it is for me. So you've in this collection, you'll find anything from young Black artists to old Black artists to Greek artists to Hungarian artists to German artists. It's all the same because it's the combining theme, if there is one, is the quality.
Right. And then I really like the way you say that too, because it's about a human experience. All of these people are human. We don't know their hair color. You know what I mean? So why, you know,
what would we say if we find out that a part of the people working in Michelangelo's workshop were Black?
Right.
We don't know, you know, and then they interpreted a canon that we know nothing about. We do not know about. We just know that we relate to the quality a piece has. So for me, it really doesn't matter who made it. I just hope it's going to be fierce.
Right. And it's all, yeah, it's all about our human experience, which is all shared, you know, no matter where we're from or who we are. So yes. When you look for new work, do you look online, fairs, auctions, or galleries? What do you find? Or is it just all different places?
For any aspiring listeners, I just want to tell you one thing. With everything that you know about life and the experience you made, you just look. My eyes are open 24 hours a day, and I don't make a separation between Instagram, flea markets, garages, galleries, art fair. And I've been to all of them. You find amazing stuff everywhere and anywhere, and you find really bad stuff everywhere and anywhere, even on very posh art fairs. I saw stuff that left me speechless because I could not imagine that I saw that there. And that tells you as a collector that develops this hobby, look anywhere you can. You'd be surprised what you might find.
Yeah, I really enjoyed hearing that. And especially for some of our listeners who are collectors or maybe even curators. Last week, we had the opportunity of interviewing Hamza Walker. He's a really good friend with Theaster Gates. And that was one of the things that he mentioned, too, is, you know, not really worrying about the whole science of art, but just there's loving it because of what it is, you know?
You're an artist, so I'm going to tell you, what's the science when you had a rough night, you didn't sleep well, you know you want to try to get something ready, and you go into your pottery workshop in the morning? There is no science. You just have to face the clay and be like, this better be good.
Right.
And the artist that I speak to, you know, if you speak to Gerhard Richter, who's a German artist, one of the most expensive traded in the world. His paintings reach up to 60, 80, 100 million. He gets up, he goes to the studio and he makes a painting. And he's actually really, really upset that his paintings are so expensive, because an artist has the interest to entice and to share their experience with as many people as possible. And this is where it's a dilemma. Yeah, he knows that his stuff is really, really outrageously expensive, but he necessarily doesn't care. That's not what he's in it for. I know people be like, yeah, he don't mind the money. It's not about that. He just gives the pieces to the market. And then there, of course, is a whole mechanism, marketing and art marketing, this and that. But if you speak to the artist genuinely, he might as well just give you a piece and be like, because it's all about liberation of art, liberation of thought.
Outstanding. So I noticed that in some of your interviews, you got to know some of the artists. Is getting to know some of the artists of the work that you collect an important part of your collection process, or how do you feel? I don't think so. I think
you just say that because I nodded my head. You saw me going.
Well, just looking at the rhythm of some of these questions that we have prepared for you, I think you're just like, no, there's no science, there's no nothing.
It's about you loving life. And I tell you, it's a really dangerous thing. I know it's very popular that people say, yeah, you got to socialize with galleries and you got to socialize with artists. You know, I realized that an artist wants to do his work. And if he's going to have 50,000 cocktails with 50,000 collectors, he's not going to be able to do that. So I keep my engagements and my interactions with artists very, very brief because I need them to do what they need to do best to work undisturbed, you mm-hmm. know? And if people be like, yeah, you could be befriended, I'm not sure if it's going to be a friendship. It's harder because this work over here with that circle, I bought from somebody who was a friend first and then over years turned into an artist. And now he's absolutely incredible. But I remember it like yesterday when he was a young student in Frankfurt. His uncle lived here and he came to me one day. He was completely excited and sweaty. And he was like, oh my God, I'm thinking about going to Berlin to become an artist. I'm like, really? Just knowing what's involved in making an artistic life a success. It's not like you sell every week and every day, unless you're a superstar, and then it's stressful enough because people only buy one period of your work and not the other. So you're limited in the way that you express yourself, but that's another story. So, you know, to see him develop and to have a conversation with him about life now, and we've been friends, I want to say, for 10, 15 years, is something completely different. This guy is so good now. Just to give you a hint, his name is Paraski Akustidis, a young Greek, and it's this work right here that a gallerist, a major gallerist from Berlin, is hopping into his car next week to come down here to see this work I bought before he could buy it because he said it's probably the best work this artist ever did. Mm-hmm. I'm honored to be able that he said, I'm going to sell them to you. He could have sold them to everybody else. Friendship has nothing to do with it. And I'm hesitant to buy artworks from friends because I do never want to go down the course of a bargain just because I happen to know you. You're still incredible. So I need to treat it like it's incredible, despite mm-hmm. the fact that I'm your friend.
Right. And for some of our audience, they may not understand some of the things that you were just talking about. You mentioned freeze art, and then sometimes you may open up your home to allow people to come in and actually view some of the pieces you have. Yeah. For some of our artists, they may not understand those programs. Could you explain those?
Okay, this is a private collection. People need to understand that I'm not a posh, which is not a bad thing to be posh, but I'm not a collector that has an addition to the house that's operated like a gallery. I live in a rental apartment in the city of Frankfurt in the middle. It's very, very cheap because I had my contract for longer than 22 years. So my rent didn't go up. It's owned by the city, and that makes it very affordable. And this is some of the processes behind it. I don't drive a car, I drive a bike. If I need a car, I get a rental. And now you understand how I'm able to save up the money for this collection. Now, just because I live with it doesn't mean people are not allowed to come inside. So a couple of years ago, and this was the inspiration by Javier and Monica Mora, names that you want to write down. They have a beautiful art collection in Key Biscayne in Miami. And when I went there doing the course of Art Basel, they have showed me nothing but hospitality. They were the friendliest people. They feed you. They give you water. They give you everything. Talk about the collection nonstop. I've asked them questions till their ears were bleeding. But this was such a strong impression for me. They welcoming me being a young black collector into their home. You know, I was like, wow, people actually really do this. And then I got curious and I was challenging myself if I was able to do something like this as well. Now, the first thing I had to overcome is I was afraid that if I show people this kind of stuff, they're all going to laugh about me. Mm. You know, you have to understand this is my passion and I burn for these things. But then, you know, you have friends who rather go for a beer and be like, what? Why are you always buying that? What's with you and art? What's wrong with you? You know, shouldn't you blow it on a vacation or go somewhere and just blow the money? I don't have that choice because I'm this is in my heart. If I leave this house and I travel, I get my mood changes because I'm not amongst these rechargers, these batteries, these things that give me so much power. This is where it makes me nervous. And this is when I decided I'm going to open the house. After I had this experience in Miami with the Moras, I came back to Germany and then a friend of mine organized a city festival called Open City. And one of the state's representative of my county said, hey, they're doing this. Did you want to participate? And I said, you know what? This would be a great chance to try to open my door and see how people actually like it. You know what happened? the minute that we announced that this would happen, I would open my door. The tickets were booked out. I had 250 guests in 2 days.
Wow.
Wow.
That's, wow.
And that left me speechless, you know, because you expect that people make fun or they go, seen it, done it, lame. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what I realized is that people were totally interested to see how you manage living, you know, and then you could see, you could go visit a single mom and she's going to teach you about diapers and this and that and how to go shopping and how to provide food for a family of 5, 4, 6, 10, who knows? But people were trying to find out because they're so afraid to go to art galleries and they're so afraid to understand what art means that they were amazed that you could just go to somebody's house and you get a teaching on how to make a better living, maybe by living with art. And that's totally simple.
Wow. So what do you enjoy most about living with the pieces that you have?
The interactions with people. The rest is extra. I'm not trying to give you more because it's simply that. Yeah. Through that, you know, I've achieved so many. You through dealing with art, you meet people that enable you to do projects. Mm-hmm. If I've never had the experience with the Moras in Key Biscayne, I would have never had the experience with me opening my house. That would have never led me to understand the bigger picture on what you can do for your community where you stay. And that would have never led for me to become, I think I'm the only Black director of an art weekend in Germany, definitely, and probably most of Europe, if not the only one. Just because you climb from vision to vision to vision with the people that you meet on the way that tell you you can do it, go ahead,
yeah.
You know?
Just love that. I just love hearing that. And I really appreciate your candor and your honesty about the whole subject. So does some of the art that you've collected ever influence the work that you do in fashion?
Oh my God, this is the week of the unusual questions. Yesterday, as you know, yesterday I had a Zoom with a community. It's called Young Collector Circle, and they're based in Amsterdam, which is incredible. And she asked me in the Zoom call, did you realize you have a lot of German artists? And I'm like, no, I didn't. And now you're asking me another question because I work in production. So as a show producer, you work with very contemporary settings. You know, it doesn't matter if you stage a car or a fashion show in Paris or New York. These settings are very contemporary. What I realized is it helps me separate better what I appreciate. You know, a lot of people come to this collection and be like, why is it so classic? Because during daytime, I build multi-billion dollar screens with digital content, and you're in meetings consistently redefining how you emotionally are able to stage a product. So I didn't want to take that home. I cannot take that home because it would be too close to my work. So therefore, most of the works that you find in my collection are a little more traditional than you would believe, are a little more classic than you would expect. So does any of the works influence my work? No, because I think I keep my private life and my business life just separate. I think one would, you know, everybody talks about creation and inspiration. Sometimes you could do too much. Sometimes it's good that you have different interests and you have different focus points and you have different heavy hitters in different segments. And this is how I keep it. I guess I'm completely fine with this.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So we know that you're involved with, like you mentioned, a few programs that you're involved with related to the arts. Could you tell our audience a little bit more about like the what you do?
I don't have so many programs because, as you know, time is an issue. Like all of us, I like to live, and live means I sometimes like to catch up on my sleep. Sometimes I want to read a book. I want to see my family. I want to cook. You know, all these kind of things. So there is not so much time. There's one major program that I developed as a concept and that is now funded by the city of Frankfurt and the state that I live in. It's an art festival that, an art weekend that contains almost all of the galleries in Frankfurt, over 50. And plus on top of that, we have a podium, like a symposium where you meet big time art market players from all over Europe. to talk about the current situation on what does it mean to be a current gallerist? What does it mean to be a current artist? What does it mean to be a young emerging artist and you don't have a gallery, you know? And this is the kind of things. And beside that, we trying to show people the beauty of their own city, which we sometimes forget. So we curated a program where people are able to visit districts of the city, not to see the museums and the galleries, you know, but to see the ateliers of young artists, to see the restorators who put an artwork together when your cat scratched it and your dog peed on it, you know, and stuff like that. We're trying to show art 360. And this seems to be something that people really have a lot of fun with.
Yeah, really enjoyed that. And I want to really thank you because for some of our audience, they may not know about programs like this, or they may go to maybe a function like Freeze Art, but they may not know all the things that you're doing. Like, for instance, when you were talking about dealing with the Moras and meeting them and your interaction with them, and now you've been able to establish a relationship that has lasted for years and the impact that it's having on the community. What positive influence would you say that some of these programs that you've been involved with has had on the community?
The strongest one, you do not wake up in the morning trying to be like, ooh, I got to do something that's going to influence the community, because you do not know what the community is busy with. If you're busy fighting for your rent, and if you're busy fighting for a new job, and if you're busy paying up your house, and you're busy getting kids, then I do not know what I could possibly do for you. All I need to do is try to believe in myself. And trust me, sometimes this is the hardest thing. You know, putting this festival together and talking to the city and talking to the county to get funding of almost 200,000 euro is the hardest thing, because all of a sudden you're forced to think politically, which I'm not. Yes, I am political, but I'm not thinking politically because I don't have a career in this field. You know, I do what I do. And the biggest payback is that on Sunday, a young collective, a black collective from Berlin, African art students, together with Noah Becker, the son of Boris Becker, are coming to Frankfurt to do a black pop-up show. My benefit is that if they're coming to town, they call me to see what I'm up to. Mm-hmm. This is appreciation and this is respect. When I speak to the young woman that I told you earlier, Ineas, who founded the Wynwood Art Week against the force of Art Basel, because they don't want to have any non-official sideshows. Mm-hmm. And she tells me, as a young black woman, you showed me yours, so mm-hmm. I decided to do mine. Wow. If this is the inspiration that I can give, then so be it, because it's for free. Other people showed me and made me to test my waters, and I'm eternally grateful that, you know, sometimes you just see something, you be like, this could be me. Then inspiration could be as simple.
Mm, that's fantastic. So what do you have any upcoming events you want to tell the audience about, or do you want them to connect with you anywhere online or any of the programs you're involved with?
Oh, if they, you know, it's not so much a program. You can always check out and see what I'm doing. Most of the stuff, if I'm not too lazy, I share on Instagram. And if I say too lazy, you know, yeah, we all thinking strategic, and these mega master companies, Instagram and Facebook and blah, 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 all telling us to optimize ourselves. But you know what? Sometimes I just want to eat an apple and go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. And I do not want to post it. So, you know, check it out. It's on Instagram. It's a private collection. It's very simple to find. Sometimes I post stuff that people go rave about, and sometimes I don't post nothing for 2 or 3 weeks. The most recent and the most exciting project is the Art Weekend. It's in 6 days from now. It's during COVID Corona times that we all struggle with. So I'm eager to find out if we offer something that people are able to relate to. Do we offer words that people are able to relate to in the podiums, the panels? Are we offer to Are we able to offer a different version of our city, a different segment that people didn't know? You know, I want to see if we are able to mobilize people to be engaged. This is all we can do. And I tell my mates too, you know, if you're in a project like this and people get nervous and be like, yeah, I wonder how the turnout is going to be. If you do everything that you can do, somebody will decide if they come or not. You cannot change that. But you have to be convinced that you did everything you could do. So when you look into the mirror, it's going to be like, yeah, hey, if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I think it's going to work out.
Yeah, I think so too.
I would agree.
Yeah.
But you know, Tyrone, we want to really thank you so much, because this conversation that we've had with you was actually one of the main reasons why we started this podcast. We wanted to get into the mindset of what it is really like being an art collector and the impact that it could have on a community. And I really enjoyed this discussion, because sometimes when you go to events like Freeze Art or Art Basel, you see all of this fluff, but you're getting our audience into the mindset of what's real, what it really means to be an art collector, to collect art, to create something, and the impact that it could have on a community.
You know, if there's a single young collector out there, male or female, it's incredible when you have, there's a difference, you know. You can go to somebody's house and he's going to show you Picasso and a Roy Lichtenstein and a Andy Warhol, which are all amazing artworks. But, you know, in this segment, their stories are told. They're part of the market. They're part of a financial art system. You know how incredible it is when an artist comes to you. And I just most recently had an asylum seeker from Syria come to this collection, and he saw a male headbuster that's right above my shoulder. When he saw it, he cried because he didn't understand how it was done. Then you have an old artist come to your collection, and he looks at the work of the young artist, and he'd be like, how did we do that? this is where it's coming from. And this is what people, you know, anybody involving art should look for. Look for something that's not being told to you. Tell your own story. Find your own ways. If you're lucky enough, you have a surrounding of people that constantly feed you new ideas and you know, at the same time, give you fire when you become too lazy in your thought process and in your life's philosophy. You basically need an environment that keeps you on your toes. You know, you as much as me. And I'm just blessed and lucky that for the moment it seems to work out. And, you know, I would hate to see this collection go, but you have to realize these, and if you're an art collector, this is the most important lesson. You cannot own art. You just babysit it while you live. You can never own it.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Tyrone, for coming on the show. We really enjoyed our discussion with you.
You're so welcome.
Man, I really enjoyed that discussion with Tyrone. I really love the way that he talked about some of the art that he's been able to acquire over the years. And that was such an interesting point when he talked about young collectors, because in order for him to really be influenced to the point where he actually has to make the purchase, he mentioned that he has to be convinced through his heart and his eyes. And I really enjoyed how he mentioned how he was even given chills when he thought about some of the work that he wanted to buy. Another thing when it comes to collecting work, I found it so phenomenal when he mentioned how if you're a collector, you just need to look. It does not mean that you necessarily have to go to an art gallery or a fair or a flea market or whatever. You just need to always be cognizant about the art that's around you. I found that so fascinating.
Also really enjoyed when he mentioned the reason why one of the things that he loves about living with art is that human connection. And with the incredible art that, unfortunately, audience, you couldn't see, but we could see through Zoom that he collects, it really is connected to the human experience. And I think that's one of the things he talked about, even though he has darker skin or he's considered Black. Well, his mom was Hungarian and is Hungarian, and his father's from the Caribbean. our human experience transcends all of this, those superficial types of things. And so he's connected and drawn to art from people from all different backgrounds, from Africa, from South America, from Germany. So it has to do with the way we feel and how our honesty, how we are on the inside. And so I've really enjoyed that point, that connection. So you have all these artworks, but he's remembering his connection with people as he's living with these pieces.
Yeah, and that was so interesting when it comes to actually unpacking art. I found that really fascinating. The young artist that he was talking about that actually flew out from Bali, Indonesia, to come to his home in Frankfurt, Germany, to repair that piece of work. That was really phenomenal. And we're going to have some links to some of the works that we were talking about in the show. If you go to CLSS.studio, you'll be able to actually see some of these paintings or some of these portraits or statues that Tyrone was talking about. So go ahead and visit us over there at CLSS.studio. You can also find Leah and some of the work that she does at Leah Smithson Art on Instagram and myself at Just Glaze Channing. But once again, we want to really thank you from the bottom of our hearts for joining us in this discussion. Thank you for being a part of Vessel, Art as a Doorway.